Hello and welcome to the Manchester is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston and I'm back today as your host. We're recording this on Bank Holiday Monday, just 2 days after Manchester United drew 1-1 with Brentford. But to be honest, it kind of feels like a defeat. The performance was that bad. I'm joined with my colleague Samuel Luckhurst. We were both down at the GTEC Community Stadium on Saturday evening. Samuel, it was a very long day, wasn't it?
That is a hell of an understatement. It's like saying United didn't really turn up at Brentford. I got in at 4 minutes past four because, of course, the clocks went forward. I imagine you were a little bit later.
Yeah.
And you had to get back into the city centre and hopefully not navigate Deansgate anyway. But if you did have to, hopefully you weren't on it for too long. But it was an extremely long day. The only thing that didn't go smoothly was really, I suppose, the last 5 minutes of the game. We had good journey there, good journey back. Although there was a lot to write about in terms of it was quite a watchable goalless draw. It was just Peter. It was at least going to end in a draw. And although it did end in a draw, it did in extremely frantic circumstances.
We were talking about what we're expecting from the game on the way down in the car. And I think you thought they were going to win and you're quite confident, obviously, after the Liverpool game 2 weeks
foolishly.
Ago. To build on that performance, and they had the momentum, and it was the real feel-good factor, wasn't it, during the international break? But I'm just so sceptical, I think, so maybe cynical, Samuel. And I've suggested in the past you just can't trust this team. They're frustratingly very inconsistent, and we saw that again on Saturday evening. Brentford were dominant, and it would have been a scandal if Mason Mount's goal had won the game.
It would have been daylight robbery on the night of daylight saving, with the clocks going forward.
Nicely done.
I mean, as you said, I was blind, you know, clearly I overestimated United. I just saw that with Brentford having quite a few players out and four wins at home all season, six defeats at home this season, two wins in their previous 17 games, United were one player away from being able to field their strongest 11. And after the high of the Liverpool game, everything was stacked in their favour. But were we surprised that they performed as pitifully as they did? I don't think any of us were. And speaking to Ty this morning, who watched the game, fortunately for him, he didn't have to trek down to Brentford, and he won't be trekking down to Chelsea for the 8:15 kickoff either this week. But we agreed it was actually their worst performance of the season. And scrolling through, I think they've had 16 defeats this season. There have been some real bad ones in there. The Newcastle home defeat in the League Cup, Bournemouth at home was pretty listless. Fulham was a bad setback, and they weren't good that day until maybe the last 10 or 15 minutes. But in terms of the overall performance level, I just thought Saturday was a new low for the season. And it almost would have typified this team had they won it. After he made it 1-0, and the camera showed Steve McLaren celebrating on the touchline, and it was a grin that was so broad that it told you that that is a coach there who knows that they've got away with it again, or thinks they've got away with it again. And McLaren was then doing that, he was pointing at his temples, looking at the pitch, looking at the players, and not for the first time all afternoon. It was another message that didn't get through to them, because the manner of the equaliser, I mean, there's a lot that we can cover from the game, but you just look at the manner of the equaliser, and it's Wan-Bissaka's positioning all day was awful, and it was awful to the very end. As you can see, he's the only one playing Tony on side. The ball being cut back into a void in front of United's defence, we've seen that happen before this season. Forest away when they lost there, that immediately springs to mind. But the performance overall, it was quite startling. After Brentford had that flurry of corners around the 20-minute mark, so they didn't actually start that well, and there were some murmurs of exasperation from their supporters, which are understandable given how poor their home form has been this season. But after that flurry, they just battered United, and the 31 attempts at goal, which came three shy of the 34 Liverpool had at United in at Anfield in December. The difference with those two games is that, I mean, that Liverpool one was a record, but I'm struggling to recall now any particularly standout great chances Liverpool had that day. I thought United were very good that day. The back four in particular was excellent. Kobbie Mainoo was very good. There was some discipline about the team. What let them down were the three forwards, the front three that day, because they did have a couple of very good chances. But Brentford had great chances galore. They had at least four brilliant chances in the first half alone. And the only positive about that first half from United was that they weren't 4-0 down as they were at that stage at Brentford last season. But as Thomas Frank accurately pointed out afterwards, he said that Brentford were better than when they hammered United 4-0, because in the second half of that one 19 months ago, they were able to sit in their deck chairs in the second half and just soak up the sun because they'd done the job in the first 45 minutes, and there was nothing about United that ever suggested they were going to get back into that game. With United this season, their propensity for late goals, it always, and you were saying as well, as
I kept on seeing,
I could see them nicking this. And then, of course, when Mount scored, immediately you think, because of how recent the Ahmad goal was and how recent the Mainu goal was at Wolves, that they had nicked it. But this team has a propensity also for conceding very, very quickly after scoring. And I think it's now Bayern Munich, Arsenal, Fulham, Wolves and Brentford have all scored in added time against United this season. Bayern's goal was an eventual winner. It put them 4-2 up at the time. Arsenal was a winning goal. Fulham was a winning goal. Wolves seemed like they'd got a draw when they equalised in the 95th minute. And Brentford did get a draw in the 99th minute on Saturday. And that was the very least they deserved. They were by far and away the better side. They were recognisably Brentford as well, with their back three, wing backs, primed to press, very physical, trying to maximise the set pieces as well. And United were recognisably unrecognisable. And one of the big cons with Ten Hag. You've got coaches at other clubs lower down the chain, who they get their teams playing the way they want them to play, whether they've got a depleted squad or a full squad. With United, we don't know what we're going to get. And that squad at the weekend was a very strong squad as well. It was probably the strongest bench they've had all season. It was the first time all season they were able to pick all six central midfielders. If you were to include Mason Mount, they had four centre halves available. And then they performed like that. And credit to the 1,725 fans in the away end. Their support throughout was excellent, and it helps that Brentford didn't score until right at the death. And I don't think United fans were ever going to turn on the players just because they'd thrown it away in the end. But I think partly why they were so excellent with their support is that they're accustomed to what we saw and what came before us in terms of a really dreadful performance level, and also conceding so quickly after scoring. I think a fan totted them up over the weekend. I think it's happened 13 times this season that United have conceded within 10 minutes of scoring, and the majority of them have been more towards, you know, the within 5 minutes rather than within 10 minutes. So it's a really alarming trait. And Ten Hag said afterwards that normally they're good at holding on to leads, but the evidence suggests otherwise.
Well, he's coming out with some weird comments at the moment, I think. And I have made the point before that when you're under immense pressure, perhaps you see things that kind of don't fit in with your character or what you really, truly mean. I mean, Brentford had 31 shots to hit the woodwork four times. Ivan Toney would have been very disappointed with that effort in the first half. And then even Højlund could have scored in the second half, couldn't even Flecken made that good save. Both goalkeepers had their stuff to do. But obviously, Ten Hag in the press conference, Samuel, it came out and he keeps on kind of refusing to admit that conceding so many shots is a problem. Because he's kind of suggesting that, look, these are low probability chances, but it's just not sustainable. If you keep on conceding so many shots on goal, it's going to be a problem. Do you not think it's bizarre that he's not coming out in a press conference and saying, yeah, we need to address this? And also, on the flip side as well, why hasn't he addressed this? He's had there's been enough time on the training ground to fix this problem. And it's clearly a structural issue. People talk about personnel. But that was the strongest squad, with the exception of Luke Shaw, available. The same problem just keeps on happening.
Well, with the downplaying of the amount of attempts at being peppered at their goal. I think, was it Richard Jolly said that they faced 106 shots last month in their games, and would that have been four games or five games? So City, Everton, Liverpool and Brentford, so four games. So you're averaging well over 25 attempts at goal a game at United, which is just unsustainable. And he said that the results, I think he said that, yeah, but the results have been quite good. They've not been good enough because they're still sixth in the table and they're 11 points off the final Champions League qualifying place. So, and this was happening before the new year, because he seems to be looking at this period from the winter break onwards when, did they have 8 wins out of 10 after the Liverpool game? Or it's obviously been quite a flattering number because they've not lost many games this calendar year. They lost to Fulham and City, but those have been the only defeats since we entered 2024.
The Premier League table is not just on the calendar year, is it? That's the thing.
It's exactly.
The season, yeah.
Yeah.
That can't be the benchmark. Need to improve them where they are. The six.
No. And the good thing about the panel teams that we do, which, to clarify for the millionth time, they are our personal 11s, not predicted 11s whatsoever. They are the teams that we would pick, is that you can point and say, look, actually, I did say he shouldn't start, because you'll have some smart aleck on Twitter, if you bother to even look at it, who'll say, oh, would you have started with him then? Oh, you can say that now because the game's happened. But I wouldn't have started Wan-Bissaka. I wouldn't have started Lindelof, and I wouldn't have started McTominay. Lindelof is aerially vulnerable. He's not particularly durable, and he's not particularly quick. Tony is dominant in the air. He is physical, and he is quick. So why the hell would you pit Lindelof against him? And really, when Lindelof got injured and came off, there'll have been a lot of United fans in the away end who'd have been relieved at that. And not just because it was Martinez coming on and because Martinez is so popular, but they really needed Maguire from the start. And although Maguire beefed up that defence in the second half, it didn't really change the problems that were going on in front of him, because there was no protection. And after the Liverpool game, and the manner of that victory, we did dwell on the flaws of that performance, of United not laying a glove on them for 40 minutes in the second half, of that infamous pass that took out 5 players of their team at 1-0 in the first half. Because the midfield, when we saw that it was Maynou and McTominay, we did think, well, it's not a defensive midfielder there, which is a big risk, but the ends justified the means. And McTominay is a player, he reminds me of a squad player version of Fernandes, and that he plays in moments. And if you look at his goals this season, they've either been off the bench or in quite emotionally charged atmospheres. It's either been coming off the bench to score twice in added time against Brentford, off the bench against Villa, off the bench against Wolves, when he scored against Sheffield United. Sir Bobby Charlton passed away earlier in the day, and there was a unique atmosphere, and of course an academy graduate coming up and scoring the goal that lends into it. The Liverpool game the other week, of course, was one of the best atmospheres of the post-Ferguson era. And you can't get away with playing on emotion every week. You've got to be different if you want to be a really top-level player. The great players, they do it consistently, because they won't just get up for a game because there's a lot riding on it, or it's a make-or-break moment, as laudable as those characteristics are. And I just thought the concept of naming an unchanged side, I just didn't get. I didn't agree with it whatsoever. And I know there was mitigation with Casemiro clearly not being fully fit, I suppose, with trying to sustain momentum. But Wan-Bissaka is not a left-back, and extending that run beyond the 3 games he's had at left-back would be hazardous. He was appalling. I can only think that he only played the full duration because there wasn't another fullback to turn to. Same with McTominay. He's one of the most robust players in the team, so that would be why he played over 100 minutes of the weekend. But his performance indicated that he should have come off far, far earlier at some point in the game.
It's actually there, isn't it, when you watch sometimes the games of McTominay, that midfield's non-existent, really. And you're never going to control a game with Fernandes and McTominay starting, because they're both incapable of kind of keeping the ball under pressure. And they look towards Maynou a lot, and he's only 18 years old. And he's the only one who kind of has that composure and ability.
And he was unwell on Thursday, yeah, and missed training. So his performance at the weekend, which was subdued, is forgivable. And you can cut Garnacho some slack as well. He started 26 or 27 games on the spin, and he's been United's best player for me this season as well. I mean,
he looks tired, doesn't he, Garnacho? I think that's understandable, yeah, as well.
And he'd played in LA on Tuesday night, travelled to Manchester on the Wednesday, trained on the Thursday. At least he got to sleep in his own bed the night before the game. But it's going to take it out of a young player like that. But of course he had to start. Nobody was saying that he shouldn't have. And as I said, that's why you can cut him some slack for having an off evening. But the those three selections, I said Lindelof, Wan-Bissaka and McTominay, just didn't make any sense to me. And then they were compounded by Hoyland looking more like the Hoyland pre-Boxing Day in the Premier League. Garnacho didn't perform. Rashford regressed really poor again, to the point where I think it would probably be advisable to drop him for the Chelsea game.
Yeah, I'm not
sure Thursday
I can criticise Hoyland's performance, because I mean they just didn't get up the pitch really, and there wasn't much for him to do. He was making the ball stick a few times in the first half, but United just weren't in Brentford's half really. It was really poor.
One of the problems with Hoyland as well, and this was not his making, was that they were going long at goal kicks. And clearly they wanted to bypass Brentford being high up the pitch, and they were literally on the edge of their own area, Brentford, for United's goal kicks, because they scored, of course, from a United goal kick last season when they pressed Christian Eriksen, and was it Norgaard who scored that day to make it 2-0. So United tried to bypass it going long. All they were doing was providing heading practice for the three Brentford centre-halves up against Hoyland, who, as good a focal point as he is when he's on form, he is going to struggle in those circumstances. So I didn't really get that. As you said, Rashford, at his performance level, whilst he's been scoring, it's been decent at best. But that was a really, really dreadful, dire display from him on Saturday, just very anemic. And he's clearly had his confidence dented as well, where he's quite peripheral in England.
I think there's definitely a few examples of that, though, wasn't there? When in the past, he kind of just get a shot off without thinking. And there was a few opportunities where he could have done that. And he kind of took an extra touch, maybe lost the ball or picked the wrong pass. Surely Marcus Rashford is playing full of confidence. He takes that shot and probably finds back the net.
His decision-making on the ball was particularly poor. It was either one touch too many or two touches too many, not under-hitting the ball. Or I think in the first half, he miscontrolled the ball quite hopelessly and he went out for throwing, and Ten Hag started that. At that point, he cut loose a little bit. He started to really try and cajole the players. He was clapping encouragingly. But by the end of the game, there were a number of times where he was just, you know, turning away in disgust, or at one point he was berating Antony as he was running back, because Antony had gone to press quite aggressively and all it did was leave a big gap behind him. But there was just a lack of understanding in general, and that's happened so many times this season where these players go to the pitch and they just play like absolute strangers. There's a lack of communication, there's no real telepathy, and you can't get by just playing on emotion.
You're not looking at that performance, Samuel, and you're not thinking it's through a lack of effort. You're not criticising them for that. There's tactical issues here, and surely that lies at the door of Erik ten Hag.
Of course, there's
massive structural problems. And as I keep on saying, he keeps getting asked about it in his press conferences, and he's kind of playing things down. But ultimately, it's his responsibility. They should be organised better. There should be a better system. And I keep on saying he's been in charge for over 18 months. He spent over £400 million, and the football just isn't good enough.
He knew 2 years ago that he was going to be the United manager, and nobody was expecting him to solve all the problems within a two-year period. But after the progress of last season, to go this far backwards, it is a worry for them. And that's why his future is in the balance, to put it politely. And you look at the midfield, because, again, as I said earlier, the problems were in front of the back four, because there was no shielding. And if you've not got an expert or a specialist defensive midfielder in there, you are going to struggle. The problem for United is that normally it would be Casemiro and Mainoo, but Casemiro has been by and large poor this season. He has become an imperfect option there.
Yeah, because
he does allow Mainoo to get up the pitch.
Exactly. The midfield's so much better balanced when he plays, and he allows Mainoo to push up into more prominent positions, doesn't he? So even though he's not been at his best, it's important that he plays really.
It is, and the alternative is just not coming into the reckoning at the moment. In Amrabat, who Ten Hag said last season we didn't have a number six alternative. This season we do, but Amrabat has been so out of his depth that he was completely unused in the Liverpool game, when there were five substitutions made in a match where a lot of people would have wondered, myself included, is he going to start, because Casemiro had withdrawn from the Brazil squad and was unavailable. But he's not getting a kick at the moment. Christian Eriksen, understandably, hasn't started many games of late. I thought he was very good when he came on against Liverpool, but nobody was expecting him to start on Saturday. I think the midfield too that Ten Hag went with was very, very predictable. And sometimes that predictability can be a problem. If Brentford are second-guessing that, or second-guessing it, then it's easier for them to prepare for, and the shortcomings in that midfield are quite obvious. And there was also the advantage Brentford had that Mainoo had been unwell on the Thursday, and he clearly wasn't completely right. I thought he started relatively decently. His touches of the ball
were usual confidence. Mainoo's involvement was reduced really in the game. You said, he started well and he was kind
when of... Brentford kind of took him out of the game, really, as soon as they got a stranglehold of it. And as we've said time and again, if United haven't got Mainoo on the ball, they are not controlling the game in any way, shape or form.
I thought Varane was all right, Samuel, in the first half. He was definitely the standout performer in the opening 45 minutes, if you can say that, considering how poor it was. But he made a lot of clearances. He won a lot of headers. Brentford were really dangerous with the crosses they were playing into the box, and that's really where they were getting the most joy from in that first half. But then we see it quite happening time and time again, unfortunately, with Varane. He was substituted at half-time when the players emerged for the second half. We noticed on the television that there had been a change. And obviously, Maguire had been sent out to warm up, hadn't he? So he replaced Varane. And I guess that's the problem. Look, his contract expires at the end of the season. There is a decision to be made on Varane. I managed to ask him as he left the stadium if he was all right. He said, look, it's nothing too serious. I think Ten Hag said it was a precaution in his press conference as well, didn't he? That change. But it kind of sums it up, doesn't it, with Varane. He's a brilliant player and he is still United's best defender, but he just succumbs to injury problems far too often, unfortunately.
And unfortunately for him, he had gone quite a long time without missing a game through injury as well. I think the last game he'd have missed before... the last time he came out of a game, whether it was missing it or whether it was coming off during the game, was probably West Ham, I think, in December, 2 days before Christmas. He was unwell for that one. I think he might have missed a game at the start of that month with a sore back. So it was the first time he was that he succumbed to an outright injury since early December. So you're looking at 4 months, which is... Yeah, it's quite good going given how brittle he's been for the majority of his time at United. But as you said to me in the first half, he's still United's best defender. So it'll be interesting to see what arrangement, if they can come to an arrangement, because United want him on a reduced salary. But he's in a position where he can say, well, look at my record when I do start, and this is the consensus, this is what I've done, and I have been fitter in recent months, and they don't want too much upheaval at centre half as well, I would have thought, because Johnny Evans is out of contract, and you'd say that he would be a logical player to retain, but they do need to sell one centre half at the very least in the summer, and Lindelof is the prime one to get rid of. He's out of contract next year. There would be resale value in him, and he's still 7 years on, has not developed the core characteristics of a Premier League centre half.
When someone is one-on-one with Lindelof, you do fear the worst, don't you? There was that in the second half, I think, when someone was bearing down. I can't remember who it was. And you just think, oh, God, he cut inside. Lindelof fell over. Fortunately, I think it went wide of the post. But yeah, he was very poor again on Saturday. We'll leave it there for part one, and we'll be back in a moment for part two. Welcome back to part two of the Manchester is Red podcast. Now, Samuel, shall I try to give you another positive? I laugh as I say that. Andre Onana, I think he made some key saves again. He has had a turnaround in form in 2024, to be fair to him. Some important saves, as I said, some important interceptions. His distribution was all right as well again. Is it a positive when the performance is so disappointing? Can you take any positives?
It's a positive that I think Manchester United's DHL Twitter account was fishing for yesterday when they put out that ridiculous tone-deaf tweet. I thought that Phil Lynch had taken over the account and was checking, maybe hadn't checked his sentiment graphs that day and was just quite enthusiastic. But Onana made one very good double save. Ten Hag actually... He clenched both fists and raised them and applauded Onana for that. He, understandably, he wants Onana to excel because they spent quite a bit of money on him. It's his signing. He had him at Ajax as well. And in recent months, he has improved undeniably. Not all of the kinks have been ironed out, but he has still, I thought they've certainly Wolves away, City away, he let in some savourable shots in those games, but he has also had some very good performances along the way. I think that he's, I think I gave him the highest mark or joint highest mark away to Forest in the FA Cup because he kept a clean sheet, even though the saves he made that night were quite standard. But even the role he played in Fernandes laying the ball off to Rashford in the derby, that was a very precise and deliberate kick to Fernandes, and United are starting to benefit from his distribution more. Not so much on Saturday, because I just think it was the wrong tactic. I think they needed to be bolder, if anything, and try and play out from the back. But they were reluctant to do that because I think they were possibly spooked by what Brentford had done to them at the Community Stadium last season. But yeah, he certainly got the joint highest rating in like player mate ratings at the weekend. There were not very many positively marked players, but that's because the performance was poor, and that's how it works. United, if they play badly, they get marked badly. They get criticised. If they play well, they get marked quite high, and they get praise. That's how it works. But there are a lot of people out there, some players, quite a lot of fans who don't understand journalism, who don't get it. So that's why we're talking about United in the tone that we're talking about them today. It's not difficult to work out.
But it does feel like a defeat. I mean, even fans would say that themselves. I said to you around the 85th minute, I think I said, it almost doesn't matter if they score now. Yes, it'd be fantastic and they get the 3 points, but the damage had been done. The performance was so poor, and that was always going to be the narrative in the week. You just feel sorry for those fans coming down on Easter weekend, 8 p.m. Obviously no trains back to Manchester, unfortunately, so outstanding loyalty as usual, and they were in fine voice. What does it mean for Ten Hag's future? And Samuel, we kind of touched upon it in the first part. There's obviously no decision being made at this point, that's what we understand with Ten Hag. But these results, and more importantly, the performances just cannot bode well for his chances of remaining in charge of Manchester United next season.
It's evidence to file with the other performances that when you're weighing it up, whether he should be kept or sacked, this would go in the pile of evidence for why they should sack him, because there was no style again. And this was after an uproarious result win against Liverpool only 13 days earlier. And you're expecting United against a team, as I said, who'd won two of their previous 17 games, who had quite a few players missing, who had lost more games than they've won at home in the Premier League this season. And United had, they could have fielded 10 of their strongest, 10 from their strongest 11 in that game. And then they produced their worst performance of the season. So it counts against him. Someone said at Brentford on Saturday that that's the kind of performance that leads to a manager getting sacked. And they didn't even lose. And that's the territory we're in with Ten Hag. That's the reality of it. The Liverpool game, his approval ratings obviously went up, understandably so, because it was a hell of a win. It was a quarter final for the ages, the manner of it. If you couldn't savour the emotion and the jubilation as a United fan on that day, then something was wrong with you. With us, we have to look at it objectively, and there was a reason why on the MEN there would have been a hell of a lot of positive coverage after that game, because it warranted it, it merited it. It was the season high so far, and hopefully for United, they'll have a greater high when it comes to probably an FA Cup final, and the intention would have to be to go one step further than last season when they lost to City. But when you look at their form this season, I think they've won 20 games and they've lost 16 games. They've not had many draws. I think Saturday might have been only the fifth draw they've had all season. And that does give you an idea of how... I'd not ever described them as inconsistent, because I think that's putting it mildly. A lot of the wins have papered over the cracks, but I don't think it's cracks anymore. I just think they're broken. And that's why Ineos have been and will continue to assess managerial candidates who could potentially replace him. And it's why there is there was a reasonable chance of history repeating itself, of the Dutch Man United manager being sacked after winning the FA Cup, as happened with Louis van Gaal. And there have been far too many parallels between Ten Hag and van Gaal. As I said, what Ten Hag is saying in some press conferences, if you're in the comms team at United and you look and you're taking your fan hat off, you're looking at that and you've got to be startled by it. I mean, the bizarre comment he made at the weekend about City being lucky to beat Brentford. I watched probably an hour of that game and I didn't get the feeling that City were lucky to be ahead. There was an aberration, I suppose, from their perspective, and that from a goal kick, Neil Mopay of all people managed to score before half time. City had equalised. Within 10 minutes of the second of the restart, they were 2-1 up. They ended up winning 3-1. I think lucky. I don't think anybody would have referred to that win as lucky in any of the newspapers the following morning, or any Brentford fans walking away from that game would have thought that it was a lucky win for City. And just things like that leave him open to ridicule. So it's, as you said before, he is in an invidious position. I think his rhetoric in press conferences has changed since Sir Jim Ratcliffe was the only bidder left at the table. And he wouldn't be human if it didn't affect him. The uncertainty around him, and I think it would be pointless, and people at United also think it would be pointless to issue a vote of confidence, because there's a reason why that those three words are usually prefixed by the word dreaded. It doesn't bode well for a manager if a public vote of confidence is issued, and I don't think Ten Hag would want that either. So United have just got to carry on regardless, get to the end of the season, assess the season.
It could be a friendly handshake, couldn't it, at the end of the season? That's the way I'm starting to feel about it.
Quite possibly. And you've also got to factor in Ten Hag's first season, because it was a good season. But ultimately, you're judged on what you're doing, not on what you've done. And there has been a gradual decline from United since the League Cup final last year. And that was more than 13 months ago now. And along the way, there have been some peaks and some unforgettable wins. As I said, they've had four Fergie time wins this season. If Mount's goal at the weekend had been a winner, it would have been a club record for stoppage time winners in a single season. And this is another issue that Ten Hag has, that as laudable as that characteristic is, you do not want it to be happening so frequently in one season. It's currently the joint highest for a season with the 2018-19 season, when there were winners for Sanchez against Newcastle, Rashford against Bournemouth, Fellaini against Young Boys, and of course Rashford winning the tie against Paris Saint-Germain. Three of those winners came under a manager who was sacked before Christmas. That tells you that, as laudable and as resilient as it is of United to be getting these late wins, does it tell you that it means that the manager's methods are working? No, if anything, it shows the opposite.
It means you're just getting by, doesn't it? You just get by.
It does.
Those moments
it
are
does.
Fantastic, and they're brilliant for supporters and even players.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Need to perform better. It needs to be sustainable.
Ferguson's longevity was not underpinned by late winners. It was proven goal scorers. It was consistently winning games. It was having solid foundations in defence. That was almost a payoff, really, the manner of those wins. In the treble season, they won two games in stoppage time. Liverpool in the FA Cup fourth round, and of course, the Champions League final against Bayern Munich. I think after Steve Bruce delivered the birth of Fergie time, if you like, against Sheffield Wednesday in 1993, United went nearly 3 years without having a stoppage time winner. And then after Andy Cole did it against Sunderland in January 96, they had to wait another 3 years for a stoppage time winner. So although there have been so many of them, they were spread across 20 years in Ferguson's case. And this season it is different, because the edict for more added time, it's resulted in more added time goals in the Premier League. I think in the Premier League era, it's already a record for goals scored after the 90th minute, which is it's kind of inevitable and has to be factored in. But there have been so many goals involving United's games. I think there have been 26 goals from the 80th minute onwards in their 90 so-called 90 minute matches, sometimes the games are going well beyond the 100th minute. And that amount of drama and jeopardy, we were saying it again on the weekend, this team cannot go a week without drama. It feels like it was why everyone was so pleased about the Everton result last month when they won 2-0 through two first half penalties. It was an easy one to write up, that one, but that was a rarity this season. And when it's happening that frequently for United and against United, because as I said, Arsenal, Bayern and Fulham have got winners beyond the 90th minute against them, and they've conceded other late goals as well during that time. When it happens that frequently, it's not a sustainable formula if you want to become, you know, the aspiration for United is to become champions of England again. And that's not going to happen this season. Absolutely not. Everyone knows that. But it might not even get them top four or top five.
We'll come onto Mason Mount in a second, because it's obviously worth talking about his goal. And it could have been the turning point, or maybe it will be. But it's worth talking about that kind of style of play again, because you talked about the long balls, and that was obviously deliberate a few times from Onana. But these are the games, Samuel, that Manchester United should be going to Brentford, who are struggling in the Premier League this season and imposing themselves. You've got to respect the opposition, obviously set up to a certain extent to accommodate that. You should be backing your own principles and your own beliefs and your own tactics and going there and playing your stuff. But when you think about that, what is United's style of play? What is their philosophy under Ten Hag? That's the problem. When you ask that question, what is the answer?
I don't think there is an answer. There have been times this season where they've played at a level and they've been so stylish that you've come away from it thinking that is what he would want. The first half against Wolves is probably the best example of that. I think he said it was the first hour, which is fair enough. They should have been further ahead than 2-0 at half time. There were a couple of games around November time, I thought, half an hour against Galatasaray away, up until maybe Marcus Rashford's red card against Copenhagen.
But even
away.
In those games, you're listing matches where obviously glimmers, but then they've become erratic, and that's the problem, isn't it?
Glimpses, yeah, exactly. And a game lasts for 90 minutes and then some. And it's no good just turning it on for 60 minutes and not winning a game or almost throwing a game away, which was the case at Wolves. It was ridiculous that they found themselves in a position where they were having to get a 97th minute winner in a game that they had dominated for the majority of it. But even when they went on their best winning run this season, they got pummeled a little bit by Villa away, but on comes Scott McTominay to get an 80-something minute winner. Luton away was quite chaotic. They started brilliantly, but then they were pegged back and Ross Barkley's skimming the crossbar at the death. I think the West Ham win was good game management in that they went 1-0 up. I know West Ham had good opportunities that day as well. David Moyes correctly again said afterwards that he felt West Ham were better at Old Trafford than they were when they beat United at the London Stadium just before Christmas in terms of their performance. And I didn't disagree with that. So that gives you an idea of, you know, I think we're covering it quite well in that when United have been winning this season consistently, they've not been convincing. And the amount of times that they've played at a level where you've thought, yeah, that's the United you want to see, They've simply not done it for 90 minutes this season, I don't think. They've had six wins that have been by a margin of two goals or more. Two of them against Everton, who can't score for toffee, which is a pun that we've used far too many times. Another one was in a League Cup game where Crystal Palace just decided to hit the eject button themselves. Two more were against a League One side and a League Two team in the FA Cup. So when you're looking at this evidence and you think more and more about it in terms of how they've gone about this season, it's very, very difficult. It's becoming difficult to justify not changing manager in the summer. And I think it's far too weak an excuse to say there's not an obvious candidate, there's not a standout man to come in. If you're a sporting director or a football administrator worth their salt who's charged with overseeing managerial changes, you've got to be well aware of the ideal candidates to come in and who would be an upgrade. And the way United are playing, how can you say this candidate, that candidate, that candidate would all be downgrades? And look, I don't think you should just, you know, I can see the pros, I can see the cons, and the mood will change from week to week. But you know, I wrote last week, kind of like still dwelling on a little bit on the Liverpool result and also the story surrounding Ten Hag's position, that Ineos cannot and will not make a call on emotion. Ed Woodward made Ole Gunnar Solskjaer permanent manager based on emotion because of what happened in Paris and a brilliant win against Mauricio Pochettino's Tottenham. United are in a better place than they were then, so they've just got to be objective about it. And there's still a lot of games to come, so it'd be too premature to you know, say you'd be understanding of their decision either way. But at the moment, it's in the balance. I can't think of a better phrase to summarise Ten Hag's future.
If you think of the 2021-2022 season, Samuel, obviously Solskjaer was sacked and replaced by Ralf Rangnick. How utterly joyless that was, how depressing that was, such a bleak season. United have fewer points this year after 29 games played than they did in that campaign. And
in the Rangnick season?
Yeah, wow. At this stage of the season. And you add up the numbers, you look at the performances, and fans want Ten Hag to stay. They wanted him to be the man, but he's just not given them much ammunition to work with, is he? When you look at the facts in cold light.
Not all of them want him to stay. I've you know, some friends who are season ticket holders, I'd say that it's quite split. Some think that there should be a change in manager because there's no style and they're so erratic, and for reasons like you just mentioned about the points tally being lower than this stage 2 years ago. Others feel as though he deserves a shot under the new structure, and that structure might not be fully implemented for quite some time yet, because the chief executive will start in the summer, but will Dan Ashworth start in the summer? That's be quite fanciful. He's still not officially joined United.
The thing about that as well is Ten Hag want to work under that new structure? He's kind of talked about how the control and having obviously a say in transfers is a big save.
Yeah, so I asked him about that, I think in late February, and he said, and it was sensible words, he said that they wouldn't sign a player that the manager doesn't want. And of course, you have to come to compromise at times. I think with Ten Hag, there hasn't been much compromising at all. You look at some of the signs that they've made and the profile of players and where they've played, and the fact that they've played under him, it's very, very clear that he's been allowed to pull rank, and he's got his way more often than not. And that does need to change, because his hit rate in the transfer market has not been good enough, and they've squandered quite a lot of money as well during that time, even if the majority of those individuals, there have been flickers of brilliance here and there, and maybe Mason Mount will kick on now that he scored his first goal for United. But there's a reason why they want to bring Dan Ashworth in. It's because partly because his recruitment hit rate is so good, and he's very good at identifying players.
Mason Mount and Samuel, a great finish, actually. And what it was. That was in the corner.
Excellent goal.
Obviously, the away end erupted, and we thought, oh my God, they've actually done it again. And then, obviously, a few minutes later, Brentford get that equaliser. It's such a shame for Mount on a personal level, because if the goal gets the win and the 3 points, it's all about him. He probably speaks in the mix. So, and after the game, he reflects on his injury, obviously, the calf problem that had him sidelined for around 4 months or so. It's probably been a difficult period for Mount. He was obviously brought to the club to play a deeper midfield role. We've kind of discussed the merit of that and questioned whether he will be suited to that position. It'll be interesting to see how he kicks on from now until the end of the season. Chelsea's obviously on Thursday night, and he'll definitely be hungry and have a point to prove at Stamford Bridge. So do you think he'll be involved from the start?
I think he should. Whether he will or not remains to be seen, but he was quite... I was I was impressed by how bright he was when he came on against Liverpool for his cameo. He seemed pretty fit. There was no obvious signs of any ring rust there. He was energetic on Saturday as well. I don't know who it was who tugged him back just inside United's half, but how he didn't get a booking was
beyond belief.
Absolutely beggar belief. And referees, they really don't help themselves. And that referee, is it Simon Hooper? He had an absolute stinker.
That was the most cynical part of the season, wasn't it? I mean, United.
Yeah, what is a referee thinking there? Not to book a player. It was dreadful refereeing. And so he showed positive intent before he got the ball. And the more you watch the goal, it's such a well taken goal because he's got players breathing down his neck. He has to get it right in the side of the net, just tucked inside the post, and he did it brilliantly. And like he got a lot of grief from Chelsea fans during the Old Trafford game in December, whether he heard it or not at the stadium. I don't know. I don't think he was in the director's box that evening, so maybe he was in his maybe he's keeping his distance in his hospitality box. But sometimes that brings out the best in players if you start them back at their old club. Sometimes it brings the worst out of players. I mean, Wayne Rooney was consistently dreadful for a long period. Whenever he went back to Goodison Park with United, he would always go missing for those games. And we don't know how Mount would react to play him back at Stamford Bridge. He will clearly, at the very least, provided he's fit, be in the squad. But I think there's a compelling case to put him back into the team behind Hoyland, maybe Fernandes on the right, Garnacho on the left.
I was going to say that.
Casemiro and Mainoo in midfield.
Yeah, we've just discussed, obviously.
Yeah, I don't...
Casemiro and Mainoo in that midfield, because otherwise it's unbalanced. So does he start on the wing or do you move Fernandes out there?
I'd try and play to his strengths, given that it would be his first Premier League start in, 5 months, the Brentford game, and play him off Hoyland. I've never seen Mount as a central midfielder. I thought it was almost an attempted rebranding by Ten Hag there. It was quite a peculiar,
but the problem
peculiar
is
decision in that sense.
If you start, say, Fernandes on the right and put Mount there, that's not going to be a permanent arrangement, surely. Even if Mount succeeds,
because
he's so brilliant and it can work for Chelsea on Thursday maybe, but going forward, and we've talked about this with Mount, unfortunately, he needs a defined position, does he not?
But how often, and we've said this before, how often does the best side ever get picked? And not just this season, but in seasons gone by. I mean, the immortal United treble team of 98-99 of Schmeichel, Neville, Johnson, Stam, Irwin, Beckham, Scholes, Keane, Giggs, York, Cole, they only started together once at Coventry away. And I think with the 93-94 double winning side as well, Schmeichel, Parker, Bruce, Pallister, Irwin, Kanchelskis, Keane, Ince, Giggs, Cantona, Hughes, I think they might have started only 11 times together. And that was back when you had a much smaller squad. I think the Premier League season consisted of, might have been 42 games or 44 games. They had a long FA Cup run. They got to both cup finals that season, domestic cup finals. So that team didn't play often together, and that was over two seasons as well. So I think you have to, sometimes you just have to kind of like take a pragmatic view of it, that if you're being bought for, if you're coming to Manchester United and you're being bought for the kind of fee that Mount arrived for, you're going to get a reasonable quota of games. Victor Lindelof has, despite United signing a centre-half in almost every summer that he's been at the club, or tried to sign a centre-half in every summer he's been at the club, he's always got a reasonable quota of matches for United. And I think his best form for United was probably the run-in to last season. Unfortunately for him, he just didn't turn it on for the FA Cup final when he let the ball bounce inside the first 10 seconds or whatever it was.
He probably wasn't expecting that finish from Ilkay Gundogan.
I don't think he was.
No.
But you sometimes have different teams for different... different starting 11s for different
teams. Now
different
teams signed in 2017, but that's a lot of games
for Lindelof. If he's staying beyond the summer, then I think it's then some criticism of the new power brokers is warranted, because it's just such an obvious sale to try and proactively seek in the summer. But going back to the terms of the selections on Wednesday, sorry, Thursday evening. You, Ten Hag showed this in pre-season as well. He did tweak the team for the Real Madrid game when Mainu started with Casemiro, Mount was in front of them, behind Rashford, who was up front, Garnacho was on the left, Fernandes was on the right. And Fernandes has shown a number of times how good he can be from the right-hand side and sometimes playing deep as well. I don't think Fernandes, he was a problem on Saturday because he was abysmal, as most of them were, but his attitude is exemplary.
Anything else to add then, Samuel? We'll be back on Wednesday, I think, to look more at the Chelsea, but anything else you would like to talk about?
No, I think we've covered it chapter and verse. I think we've covered it comprehensively.
So thanks for your time, Samuel, and thanks to listeners as usual. As I said, we'll be back in midweek to look ahead to that game at Stamford Bridge on Thursday evening. Take care, and we'll speak to you then.